Welcome to It's M Amazing Radio on a very happy April Fool's Day to everybody. With me today, got DJ Mark with a K.
What's up?
And Kid Presentable.
Yo, yo.
We're missing out our boy, Lavender Gooms. A little busy, but we'll try to make it without him.
Yeah. We should have thought of some kind of funny joke for it being April Fool's Day, but we clearly not. The boat has passed.
Well, the last episode, I promised that it wasn't a joke that we were going to do an April Fool's Day show. Clearly,
yeah, that's not very good,
he wasn't listening to that part.
I completely forgot it was April Fool's Day until you...
So did I. Until Bobby said something, I was like, oh, we should have
this very
had
moment.
Some kind of shtick.
Oh, you guys really aware of your feet today.
Got other things to do today. Don't have time for jokes. Jokes and jokes and jokes and jokes.
Anything else?
No, that's all. Plays Mass Effect's more important than thinking of shtick for April Fools, I guess.
The North remembers, Bobby. I got Game of Thrones tonight.
So
I could care less.
Yeah, okay. Back to the fact that we run an MMA podcast and website.
All right. Bobby, that's how I feel when you guys talk about NBA all the time.
Hey, NCAA, we talk about NBA. We're drawing NBA. Comparisons to John
it's like
Jones.
Like Kobe. I'm like, whatever. Who cares?
All right, fair enough.
Circling back.
All right.
So much stuff to cover, right, Bob?
Yeah. We have two Bellators to cover, two episodes of The Ultimate Fighter, and an upcoming UFC card.
Technically three episodes if we count the Brazil one.
Oh, that's true. And that was the best one, probably.
It was.
I thought that was most entertaining.
Among other things, we learned that Vanderlei's packing heat. But we'll get to that a little later. All right, let's start with the fact that I am a, you know, Nostradamus of sorts, because in the last episode, I said that the Prindle-Santos fight at Bellator 62 would not happen, and I was right.
I would more say, I would call that an educated guess over Nostradamus, Bobby. He did weigh 300 pounds the previous week. It's not like he was coming in fresh.
Hey, that was a rumor that he weighed 300 pounds. I chose to believe that rumor.
Yeah, but you didn't come up with that rumor. You heard someone else. So I have to agree with Stefan. Not so Nostradamus. If you said 3 months ago, but a week before you heard he was 300 pounds and you figured he wouldn't lose, that's an educated guess. I have to side with Stefan. But it was a good one, Bobby. You got it.
Hey, it gives me a reason to talk about Bellator, which according to Mark, I hate.
According to you, you hate.
All right, whatever. On that card, well... It was supposed to be the main event of Prindle versus Santos, which we didn't get, which I don't think anybody was too upset about. Prindle was automatically awarded the victory, and he's going to take on the heavyweight champion of Bellator, Cole Conrad, in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be a barn burner.
Yeah.
Cole Conrad, one of the most exciting heavyweight prospects you've ever seen. It's a grindy against the fence.
Yep. Managed to have a boring striking fight with Paul Buontello. Didn't even know that was possible. I mean, seriously, Paul Buontello doesn't even block. Still was boring.
Guess he's just getting those W's, man. Can't blame him for that.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I guess you can. Never mind.
I mean, you just heard us blame him for that.
Yeah. Well,
also on that,
that
card,
I mean,
we had a Patricky, one of the pit bulls, the lightweight one. What's the difference here? They're both called Pitbull.
Well, the difference is they're two completely different people.
I know. I don't know. Which one's Patricky? One's Patricio.
Yeah, Patricky, the one that fought on this card. He's the one that's been fighting in the organization the longest.
Yeah, Patricky.
He fought at lightweight, and then he went to. Actually, he's still at lightweight. Oh, okay.
I think he's lightweight. Yeah.
Patricky.
Yeah.
Got
his
arm
is the other
broken.
One the featherweight then?
The other one's featherweight. But on this card, Patricky got his arm busted by Lloyd Woodward. Kimura,
yeah,
Frank Mir style.
Yeah, they were basically fighting for third place in last year's tournament, which are those fights. And then who would have thought Lloyd would have won? I thought Patricky was going to win this one, but Lloyd looked good in that fight. He just has that savage, like, everything he throws is hard. And what I liked a couple times was he got mounted, and he was really good at pushing Patricky's hips down and, like, shrimping out. And that's something that you have to have a lot of confidence because you're basically putting your two hands on the hips and you can get hit. But like I liked how he had so much confidence in his technique that like he's going to take that risk to get hit once to escape mount. And like I think stuff like that really helped him in the fight. I think it's one of the reasons why he won.
Yeah, it didn't look like he had all the respect for Patrycki's game at all, because afterwards he said that what was it? He called Patrycki a Brazilian beach bum, and he was like a American, I don't know, savage something or another about being an outdoorsman. So yeah, he says a beach bum never wins.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what he said, but
Yeah.
he has a, you haven't seen the him fight or saw this fight. He has this big handlebar mustache, and I think he fights out of like Montana or something. Like he fights out of some like state where there's no big gyms or anything, and he kind
Yeah,
of
he's
reps out. You
Montana.
don't have to be in a big gym to be good at this stuff, and he kind of proved it.
At least in Bellator.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in the Bellator rankings, Patrycki's up there pretty high. Getting a win over him is fairly impressive, so that's a big feather in his cap for sure.
The other noteworthy fight on that card was Rick Hahn making his lightweight debut against Ricardo Tierloni. And Rick Hahn does what you expect an American, a judo medalist to do, which is ground and pound, with some real soft shots that
But they're
knock the
not.
guy out somehow.
That's the thing though. Like he throws hammer fists and they don't look very effective, but he's knocked like everyone out with them. It's like it's weird. It doesn't look like it's like what Bobby said. They look like soft punches, but guys just go unconscious.
He throws with power. Yeah, it just doesn't look pretty, but Rick Hahn at lightweight is actually quite interesting because he had knockout power at welterweight. So even if it's not the most aesthetically pleasing ground and pound, it is effective still, so
Yeah. And he looked good. He looks
He
good.
was only one judge's scorecard away from going to the finals of the, or no, from winning the welterweight tournament. Didn't he lose a split to Jay Haran?
Yeah, I think so. Jay Haran, man, he knows how to make the closest
I think he won
fights.
every one of those fights in Bellator by split. Didn't finish anybody.
Yeah, but he lost the one that counted the most, so that's unfortunate.
We can we'll talk about the following week's Bellator card also.
Yeah, the two fights on there weren't all that. I mean, he had Weidman, he won. So those are two guys that have moved down to lightweight, and they look good. So they made the cut well, and that looks like a good tournament. I think it's going to be pretty cool. You have at least a couple guys that are, interesting. So.
The following week they had the welterweight tournament, the opening round of that. And Ben Saunders of UFC fame handled business fairly convincingly against Raul Amaya. And then Brian Baker, known famously for proposing to his girlfriend on MTV2, which sounds kind of sad. More, usually we spell it out like that.
Seems kind of cheesy, but
Yeah,
put it on
he
the
won.
spot, man. That's a lot of pressure.
It's five people watching. It's MTV2. It wouldn't have been that bad.
See, there it is, right there. No respect for Bellator.
No, it's no respect for MTV2. There's a difference.
They kind of go hand in hand. But agree, there you go. Who watches, right?
Really the noteworthy part of that card was the Amasau versus Lozano fight, because Lozano, when Lozano was in, was it he was in Amasau's guard? Was that what it was, Mark? And then like Amasau just flipped him over into mount without like
Yeah,
even
I'm not
trying, it
sure how
looked
to.
like.
Yeah, he had him in his guard. It was a nice sweep. It was beautiful.
It was one of those sweeps you see in the UFC game, and you're like, "Well, that doesn't make any sense. No one would ever do
Yeah,
that."
there was just it's it was completely instantaneous. There was no like fighting or struggle. It was just like you got it. Like you just it was beautiful. It's crazy how well it worked. But yeah, I mean it's tough to get sweeps from guard too like that. You usually see sweeps from half guard because you can duck under the guy's leg and stuff, but at full guard, and it was quick, and it was basically that was the change in the fight. That was the turning point, right? Is that the WEC thing?
The turning point of the night.
The Harley Davidson turning point.
Well, they can't have the
The
Harley Davidson knockout because it was a WEC and no one could knock anybody out.
JVC kaboom box boom of the week.
Yes. If anybody's missing our show this week to watch WrestleMania, we don't feel bad. We understand.
To be honest, I'd rather be watching WrestleMania right now myself.
Yeah, if
The
my
Rock
computer
in his
wasn't being used for the
hometown.
recording, I'd be watching WrestleMania.
I didn't even think of it. I have little interest. You a hater, Mark. You a hater.
Exactly.
Just spam. Just being truthful. Watch the Rock fight again. I guess that's fun.
The Rock. I'm here to see Hell in a Cell, man.
Got Undertaker at, what is it, minus 900 favorite?
Yeah, and well, this week we can tie this into MMA. BloodyElbow.com has essentially spoiled WrestleMania by announcing that Brock Lesnar signed a 1-year deal with the WWF.
Oh, and then Bobby, and then you just spoiled it.
So you know, again, if you wanted to watch, you'd be watching WrestleMania right now.
But it would have been spoiled. Maybe they're doing both. Maybe they're watching WrestleMania, but they're listening to our delightful insight on old MMA news.
That's exactly what they're doing. But
sounds like a perfect Sunday to me.
I don't think you signed Brock Lesnar the day before WrestleMania to not have him show up at WrestleMania. Just throwing that out there.
Maybe he's in the crowd or something. Who knows?
Makes sense, but seeing as from everything I've heard, this is The Undertaker's final match, kind of be a shame for it not to just be a clean finish.
That's true.
Okay, moving on.
All right, back to Bellator.
I think we're done with that.
Next week, this Bellator card coming up on Friday. Definitely worth giving a look because Marlon Sandro is fighting. Probably one of the best featherweights, not in the UFC. So he'll be fighting, and Ben Askren's going to try to defend his belt and not bore me when he fights Douglas Lima. I don't know what happened to Ben Askren. He was pretty entertaining when it first started, and now he just king of lay and pray.
He's a wrestler. He probably went for subs a little more often when he first started, but it's his style. It's what he does. I mean,
I remember you were excited about him, though, because he was going for finishes at first.
Yeah, he actually looked like he was actually developing his sub game pretty well. I mean, it's not the sexiest comparison in the world, but he kind of reminded me of CB Dolloway in the sense that they were going from this amateur wrestling base to try to develop a submission game rather than a stand-up striking game, realizing that's never really going to be their thing. But, you know, he's had some close calls. So, I mean, I think he's the one who said, you know, winning is important above all else in American sport culture. So a win's a win.
That's true. But if he wants to go to the UFC, ultimately, lay and pray is not going to be the way to get there fastest, because it took Antonio McKee 25 straight lay and prays to get to the UFC. He's like 41. Just throwing that out.
Yeah, but the guys Ben are fighting are better, too.
That's true. He also, I still don't think Ben won his last fight. That still bothers me, but whatever.
The judges did, and those are the only opinions that actually count. So.
Well, two of the judges did.
Two of the judges.
Me and another judge. Or, you know, we were right.
Like on page.
All right. Now, have we given Bellator enough time? Mark, is that enough?
Yeah, I think so. I think we paid our respects. We can move on.
All right. Next, talk about The Ultimate Fighter, American version. There was 2 episodes since we last spoke. Steph, you want to break down what we missed in the first, what we saw in the first one?
The first one was Dominic Cruz's top fighter, Justin Lawrence, taking on the veteran of the house, Cristiano Marcelo. And I truly thought this fight was going to be the final. I thought these two guys were the most interesting. You had the veteran on one hand, and then you just had the most exciting prospect on the other hand. And personally, Justin Lawrence is my pick. It kind of led to it was the result of that whole weird live fiasco where Dominic gave control back to Uriah and no one on his team wanted to fight. But then somehow it was Marcelo. So I don't know what happened. It was very sloppy live TV. Definitely tough live working its kinks out. But
yeah, that didn't seem like the time for them to get cute with their selection process. So Dana White had this look on his face, like with Dominic, like, "Yo, man, we're on live TV. You gotta just pick something."
You can't cut the awkwardness out of live TV.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, I thought Faber. So far, in general, I don't think Faber has been coming off as the best coach. One, Dominic, I think he's just been more eloquent in speaking on TV, and also the whole strategy that, since Justin Lawrence was going to expect Marcelo to take it to the ground and submit him, he should therefore stand with the guy who has the most electric stand-up in the house. I understand the element of surprise, but, you know,
surprise is over after
10
seconds.
I wouldn't play into my opponent's strength. So, yeah, it basically led into a lunging overhand left knockout for Justin Lawrence.
Even though he got knocked out, I thought of Marcelo's chin didn't look bad considering he got tagged, I don't know, 12 times. Clearly knows how to take a shot hanging out, shoot the ball.
90% of the coaching strategy is keep your chin down, Marcelo. Keep your chin down.
You know,
at a certain point, that's all it became. Like, yo, man, you got to do something. Put your chin down. You're getting wrecked.
Well, it's one of those things where you talk about his big pro is that he has so many fights, but his big con is that he hasn't evolved at all. I mean, you see a lot of these older MMA fighters. They have these bad habits that new fighters don't have because guys don't have that stance like Marcel was having. It's a really standard jiu-jitsu kind of stance. You can see Hoist do it back in, you know, in the first UFC days, and then guys like Ricardo Arona, they have the same thing. I don't know if it's all the jiu-jitsu training just like makes their shoulder muscles so beefed up they can't actually like bend. There's no, you know, stretching in their neck muscles. They can't actually put their chin down because it's a bad habit. But he did pretty well for having his chin straight up in the air. I thought he'd get knocked down the first round. You know, do you see for that minute he just kind of fights like this the whole time? You're like, he's gonna get cracked, and he did.
Yep.
This took a while.
Yep. And then Cruz, after handing Uriah's number 2 and number 3 picks defeats, decided to go for the jugular, as I think either he said in an interview with MMA Junkie or something, he was going for the jugular by picking Uriah's number 1 pick, Al Aquinta. And Aquinta took on Miles Jury in a fairly uneventful fight.
I mean, it was pretty close. It wasn't super exciting, but I think it was just the result of neither fighter having that great of a skill set. I was kind of saying beforehand, I think the big takeaway was that Aquinta, for being Faber's top pick, really doesn't have any type of skill or any type of like ability that makes me understand why he was the number one pick. Like, he's not the greatest striker. I think he must have messed up his right hand, because he looked really tender when throwing it in the later rounds of the fight.
Out of it.
Bloody too, yeah.
But he didn't have particularly good takedowns. He didn't set up his combos well. He doesn't seem like a submission specialist, so I don't know what he is. Like, normally the top guy they have some type of skill. Like, you see other top guys, they were either some type of NCAA wrestling All-American or some type of striking standout. They at least have one skill that they can ride. But this guy just seems to be a all-around average guy. But I mean, he eked out basically what would be a split decision in that third round.
Yeah, I watched the fight again, and I don't know how that one judge made it a split, because I thought pretty clearly one guy won one round and the other guy won two rounds, because apparently one of the judges gave the third round to Jury and he didn't do anything, I thought. But
at that point they were both pretty gassed, and yeah. I think Aquinta won just because he took the third round early, started swinging.
Yeah,
but it was still pretty uneventful because you could tell they didn't have anything left in the tank by that round, which does not bode well for a lightweight in a 3-round fight, that you are that gassed out by the third round. So
I think the reason
kind of lackluster was disappointing prospects.
I think Aquinta was a first pick for Uriah. I think Uriah had to have seen him fight before somewhere else. That's the only way it makes sense, because he didn't look particularly good in either of his fights. Uriah must have known something about him, I know he's a Sarah guy. He's a Sarah Longo fighter. I must have talked to Matt Serra about him, and Serra must have upsold the shit out of him.
I mean, because the biggest thing I remember from his first fight to get in the house is that the other guy had a gruesome broken toe. I don't recall anything Aquinta did. I just remember a guy having a bad toe. So, not very memorable in any regard, pretty much.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Right, and then... Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an exciting fight.
And then they announced for next week the long-haired gentleman, Michael Chiesa, who probably most well known so far because his dad passed away right before the first fight. He's taking on Jeremy Larson, who I have absolutely nothing to say about because I don't remember who he is.
Jeremy Larson's like the crazy looking guy, right? Doesn't he have like a little mohawk and has like pink or green or something? He has a bunch of tattoos. That's all I vaguely remember about him.
So you're saying you remember the stare down?
He hasn't gotten the TV time. Yeah, basically. I kind of remember seeing him, but, you know, seeing him in the background of the house, one of the non-key players. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, the first guy, what was it? What was that guy's name again? He's from Alaska or something, right?
Michael Chiesa? Chiesa.
I mean, he got a lot of TV time, so, I mean, everyone kind of knows who that guy is.
They're all rooting for him now, probably.
Yeah, he just reminds me of the other Alaska kid. I'm blanking on his name right now, even though I love him. Shit just got real.
Yeah.
Buddy McKenzie.
Yeah, also an Alaskan. That's just long brown hair, beardy look. That's just what Alaskans do, apparently.
Yeah, it looks like it. That dude shaved his beard and all of his hair, and he just looks like a flabby, out of shape drunk, basically.
Yeah, you gotta have that stature.
All right, and to our final episode of Tough to discuss, the debut of Tough Brazil, which I'm gonna let Kid Presentable take the lead on this. It was pretty awesome overall.
Frank, I loved Tough Brazil. It is so much more appealing to me than a normal one, just because Vitor and Vanderlei might have brain damage where he just might not be able to speak any language at all. I can't tell if he has poor English. So I was really looking forward to the subtitles to see if his Portuguese was still as bad as his English. But he actually seems pretty solid. They were vibing. It was actually kind of funny because it seemed like Dana White during the fights was talking to himself. Yeah, it was just his commentary because no one else was really speaking English to him. But, you have a house of Brazilians who all are basically Muay Thai Jiu-Jitsu guys. They all fight exactly the same. They're all pretty aggressive. So it just made for a really good night of fights.
I like the names of some of the guys. There's one dude who came out dressed like Jason from Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And then there was the guy with the Wolverine sideburns, and he called himself Hugo Wolverine, which that was great.
I was talking to Mark. I'm pretty sure he grew up the mutton chops to get the whole Logan look.
Yeah. No, that's part of his shtick. Even though they're from Brazil, they all have little shticks, you know. But yeah, there's a couple of guys. But the Wolverine, I mean, I think his stand out because, I mean, do you remember how he won with those elbows from the guard? Like, he killed that kid. That kid was completely.
That was awesome.
That was some precise ground and pound. He definitely.
Yeah, I think Dana thought he died too.
Dana kept saying, oh shit.
He was one of the guys who I really liked on that first season. I think the other guy I liked, I had to look him up because, again, a lot of these Brazilian names are not sticking with me too well. But I guess according to the Wikipedia, it's Serginho Moraes. But if you remember, he was the one who he had kind of a effeminate, high-pitched voice. But right after he heel-hooked the dude, he's like, ah, I'm such a bitch. I like that dude. He's got the personality.
Good. Yeah.
And my favorite part of the episode, of course, was when it was one fight where there was back-to-back nut shots. And then Vanderlei talked about getting a cup. And he says, my cup is supersized.
Yeah. The funny thing about that bit, though, I mean, it's in and of itself, it's funny because he's talking about how big his penis is, which is – that's just good comedy right there. But the real shtick is that after he says it, he goes to the camera and goes like, no, it's a joke. Don't – you know, like, cut it. He makes this little thing like –
Like, don't use it.
Yeah, like, that's just between you and me. That's not really, you know.
Dude, let's not put this on national TV, basically.
But and that's what made it funny for me, because not only does it just talk about his big. Yeah, it's like, you know. Joke.
8 million people watched.
I thought it was funny. I'm glad it didn't cut.
8 million people.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's seven times the audience of American Tough.
Yeah. And what, but the population is like one-tenth of us, if that?
No, Brazil?
Yeah.
They got a lot of people. They got like 140 million people, I think, in Brazil.
It's still not the United States.
Well, I think they also put it on like on Brazilian NBC or something. I think
it was on national television. TV.
It's not even that. It basically comes down to there's three things you do in Brazil. You either become a soccer player, a MMA fighter, or you run a drug cartel. So it's one of their big three. The way we got baseball, football, basketball, MMA is one of their big three.
That's right, folks. Just to be sure, you guys aren't tuned into NPR right now with World Politics or Stefan Dinglossen. The three ways to advance in Brazilian culture.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be really shitty if it was. I don't know if their economic abilities.
Like Marge said about Italians, you can be a pizza maker, a leaning tower designer, an organ grinder,
plumber,
and a pizza maker.
192 million Brazilians.
Official. Now we are like NPR. Fact-checked a bitch.
I really liked the episode, though. I like when they show, like, things are going to come up this season, and there's one part where they're showing, like, all the fights, and one part it has Vanderlei yelling at Vitor, we're supposed to be friends, how could you do that? And I just need to know what context that came up in, because that was fantastic.
Yeah, the show looks good, and I'm glad that they're... I mean, I guess you can catch it online. I mean, I had a hard time finding it. I know you guys had a hard time finding it. But then I think they're also going to play it on Fuel, like maybe in a couple months they'll start pulling them out on Fuel. So,
well,
that's something to look forward to.
Are they going to put the finale fights on the Brazil card, the pay per view? They're not going to put the they can't put the finale, those two finale fights on the main card when no one has seen those guys fight outside of Brazil, right? Those got to be like FX prelims.
Well, at that time they might have showed all of it on Fuel. I don't know how they're going to work out time-wise. But yeah, I don't think they'd be on the main card. Maybe like the undercard or something. I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
All right. Any other thoughts on Tough?
Tough,
we move on to what I've been looking forward to for the first three episodes of this podcast, an actual UFC event that's coming up in a week.
It's been a long, long, empty window of events.
All right.
If anyone out there likes MMA, and if you are listening to this, you must, or you're just our friends. Yeah, but the stories that have been on MMA websites lately have been so incredibly sad, just to how little news there is going on.
There was literally one. The title was Mike Tyson and Rosie O'Donnell discuss how adorable Uriah Faber is. What am I supposed to do with that?
An article that Miguel Torres couldn't find like good tacos in Montreal or something.
That was another one.
Just a whole lot of non-ish stories going on right now.
If you notice our site, the number of articles has went down incredibly. We didn't want to lie to you with, you know, just poor content. We just stopped writing.
Just fluff.
Yeah,
that's true. We've given him fluff.
We'll just give you nothing.
Yeah, we'll have some posts for you later this week, including a full predictions post for this upcoming card. But right before we get into this card, I want to thank the son of a bitch who won on Wikipedia and, rather than having individual pages for all UFC events, decided to combine all of 2012 into one large fucking article, which I have to scroll up and down. Props to that dude. He's taking a stand.
Now that I'm using it, it's kind of convenient. You don't have to have a bunch of tabs open for each one. You just like, well, this is this event, this is the next one. I think it's kind of has a purpose. I kind of like it, actually.
And I just think the guy decided there's too many articles on Wikipedia, and the UFC is the main culprit.
Maybe you just noticed that a lot of people want to see all the events coming up in this film altogether. But yeah, scrolling sucks. I mean, that's just not very fun or intuitive. But
all right, I'm looking at this card. This is not bad. All right, let's start breaking it down. This is you'll be on Fuel TV on Saturday, so God knows how we're going to watch it. Well, I know how we're going to watch it, but let's not admit to it right now on our podcast.
Okay, now you're just leading people to imagine how we're going to watch it. I don't like that. Don't leave it to their imagination. We have very reliable sources on how to watch anything that might not be time sensitive or whatever.
Exactly. Anyway, the main event was supposed to be Alexander Gustafsson versus Antonio Rogério Nogueira. Little Nog. And Little Nog got hurt. And they moved up Thiago Silva, who is one of mine and Stefan's favorite light heavyweight fighters, making his return to the UFC in first fight since January of 2011, where he pissed hot. We can't even say he pissed hot because he didn't submit.
His urine wasn't consistent with that of humans.
Yeah, it was like a dead horse urine.
Yeah. If anybody's a Bored to Death fan, it reminded me of the scene when Ted Danson had to submit a drug test and he peed in the cup and didn't know what to do, so he just went to the bathroom and put soap in it.
Yeah,
I imagine
deludable.
That happening.
That's legit. That seems legit.
Thiago Silva against Gustafsson. Gustafsson's the young buck trying to move into the top, 10 of the UFC.
Yeah. Well, he's pretty much the only Swedish fighter they have that has any relevance, and they're in Sweden. So.
Yeah, that basically is another reason.
That's kind of a big deal.
I think that's more relevant to his
for him.
Yeah, his main event status is more so. Yeah, I mean, they have a bunch of other Swedes, and if we break down the card all the way to the prelim fights, you'll see that, but yeah. In the main card, there's only one, and that's it.
All right, so what do you guys think of this fight?
I actually am probably more excited about it than I am with Lil Nog. Not that any Lil Nog's ever done anything wrong, because his fights are always pretty good. But, light heavyweight hasn't had a lot of legit-looking prospects in a while. But Gustafsson really is. His striking's been on point lately. But I love Thiago Silva. That dude just has some mean, vicious hands. And he's been out for a while. His fight against Vera was a little lackluster for how dominant he was, that he didn't try to do more besides play. What did he do? He played patty cake on his back while he sat on him.
Yeah. He's doing a drum solo.
But I think, you know, granted he'll probably have some rust, but I think someone gets knocked out in this fight.
If Thiago wasn't coming off this long layoff, I'd be picking him, no question. Even though I very easily could be wrong. I'm a big fan of his fighting style, which is, you know, kill the other dude.
Yeah, he's a lot more exciting. He's a lot more dangerous than Little Naga is. I mean, Little Naga is dangerous in his own right, but not in, like, the murderous, like, the other guy will go unconscious and Thiago Silva will continue to hit him until the referee stops him. Like, it's more appealing in that way that it's going to be a more violent fight than it would have been with Little Nog. And it's a good test. I think Thiago Silva, I think almost being gone for a year and not having lost someone or not having dropped another fight kind of makes him more of a contender, whereas some of the other guys that aren't, like your Jacksons and stuff and your Ryan Baders, all the other kind of like top contenders, in the last year, they've lost a fight. So they kind of have a little luster that's a little bit gone to them. But Thiago having the no contest where technically he won, but he had dead horse piss instead of human piss. I mean, it makes him a little more like a better test almost, I think. I think it's going to be a good fight.
Do you think he gets cut if he loses?
Silva?
Yeah.
No, I think the division's not strong enough. They could still use his name and his excitement to sell some other fights.
I mean, if you recall, he was a firm top 10 in the division guy before he went out, you know? He was fighting big names. He's fighting the Machidas and Rashad Evans of the world. So
those are his only losses.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a completely legit guy. He just needs to get back in the thick of things.
He's had serious back problems. That's why he was on all the painkillers. Like, he's had
a
bad back.
Painkillers, not steroids. Just for clarification for anyone out there.
Like serious painkillers. But yeah, that's why he was doing it. He was hurt. He had his back hurt even before he fought Rashad, which I'm not sure would have stopped him from getting taken down at will, but yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe he needs to get surgery then if it's, you know.
He had a year. I'm sure he took care of everything after a year. You know,
so we'll see how it comes then.
All right, co-main event. Brian Stann returning since getting his soul taken by Chael Sonnen. Taking on Alessio Sakura. I think Stan's going to bulldoze him.
Yeah, that's a good fight for Stan. This is like a perfect fight for him coming off a loss the way he lost. Like, because Sakurai is not going to be wrestling him and trying to take him to the ground hold now. He's going to be striking with him, and that's what Brian Stann wants. So it's a tailored-made fight. I mean, Sakurai is not going to be it's not going to be an easy fight, but I think Stann has enough power and enough technique to definitely take it and look good in the fight, too, most importantly.
It pretty much, yeah, I agree with you guys. It pretty much seems like a showcase fight for Brian Stann to get back on track. I think when we make picks, though, I might just go for Sakura because it's one of those things where after fighters have that soul-wrenching, like, loss, basically everyone who fights GSP, you know, notice how all those guys go on a big losing streak after? Like, even when they're expected to win, just because they got defeated so handily that they just can't recover. That seems kind of like what might happen. Just because I just based that on everyone else who got grappled to death and realized that they were mentally broken, they tend to lose that next fight. And Stan was a guy we never thought would be mentally broken. And then against Chael, you saw him just not there anymore. He knew it was inevitable.
And
that said, though, Sakura's, he's an okay guy. He's a gatekeeper, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the fight I'm looking forward to probably the most, Paulo Thiago versus Sire Bahadurzada, the Afghan killer, which you can take that nickname two ways. One, he's killing Afghans, or he's an Afghan that's killing people. It's the second in this case.
The same thing with, like, Pacquiao, who was the first executioner, and then later Mexican DJ.
Joey Beltran. Like,
yeah, and then he was also the executioner. You had the Filipino who beat all the Mexicans, and the Mexican who would win some and lose some.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I like that Sire's in the UFC though. He's an exciting fighter. I mean, he's training at a Golden Glory all that time. The man's got some power. And I'm always a fan of more welterweight showing up. So.
Yeah, he has. I'm looking over his stuff here, and he has some good names on there. So I mean, hopefully, he's just adjusting to the pressure of being in the UFC. I mean, sometimes you have to factor that into some fighters. You know, they don't look good their first fight. They call it the UFC jitters. You know, whatever. But then some guys look excellent, so I think he might be the latter in that, but...
He loses Mayhem Miller.
Paulo Thiago is a What's that?
He lives with Mayhem Miller, actually. Sire lives with Mayhem Miller.
Oh, really?
He has some of that choking on him.
Okay, that's...
That's a fun fact for you.
Okay. Yeah, that's completely relevant to what I was talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking to the same guy.
Tiago, that's... Yeah. Tiago's a tough first fight in the UFC, though, so that'll be a stern test, to say the least. But if nothing else, it should be exciting. So, I mean, this whole card, you know, got a fight, and they're all pretty exciting for the most part.
All right. Also on this card, Dennis Seaver versus Diego Nunes. Seaver, after getting kicked in the dome by Donald Cerrone and then choked, learned that he's not tall enough to be a lightweight, basically.
Like Nate says, he's 5'6". What the hell?
And Diego Nunes is like Jose Aldo if you took away the killer instinct completely. Seriously, that dude is not throwing to kill. I don't know what happened to him. I thought he used to throw harder, but last few fights.
He might actually just not have the knockout power. I still think he's pretty aggressive. His shots just don't drop people the way Aldo's does, you know? But that's, I think, true. He has a good technical, like, Muay Thai game. I mean, this should basically be a nice kickboxing battle. But Seaver, having been able to knock out guys at lightweight, or at least put them down, Seaver's strategy, he knocks you out, and then while you're just on the ground knocked out, he'll put you in a choke. That's why he's not really a submission artist, but I don't know. I think that's kind of what'll happen here. Maybe another one of those spinning back kicks to the body.
He's throwing at least four of those. Let's be straight. That's his finishing move. He has to go for it. Yeah. People don't come to see Seaver's ground game.
Yeah, it's good. That's another exciting fight, though. I mean, because Dennis looked pretty good at lightweight. I mean, he could always kind of hover around the bottom of, like, the top 10. He'd get a big fight, a big win here, and then he'd be considered maybe top 10. Hopefully, moving to featherweight, he was usually pretty fast, but I think he'll be a lot stronger. I think that's the strength that he's going to be bringing down with him. And like you said, Nunes hasn't looked, like, spectacular. He hasn't had those big finishes. So, and Seaver can pull those off. He's done it in the past. So he kind of has that X factor going for him that it seems like he'll be able to finish the fight. That seems a lot more likely than Nunes finishing it. So I think that's definitely in his favor.
Yeah, I'm looking at this card. Seriously, don't sleep on free cards. They put guys on them. I like Poppy Abadi's fighting against James Head. Abadi just goes for it.
You got Diabate, who will either punch someone to death or get punched to death. So,
yeah, and against the guy he's fighting, Krut is a Swedish K-1 fighter. I've seen him fight before, and he's pretty aggressive. And he's actually done fairly well transitioning to MMA, so that's a good fight.
And Francis Carmont, we actually saw that dude fight live at UFC 137. He's a really big black jack dude.
Yeah, he beat Chris. He looked good in that fight, too. He looked real good.
And I'm looking forward to this.
Reza Wadani. One of my personal favorite fighters is Brad Pickett taking on Damasio Page. I think that'll be it'll be a nice boxing fight. Like, Pickett is always entertaining to me. And then the fact that he comes out in a wife beater, suspenders, and a newsie cap.
Brad Pitt's character from Snatch.
Yeah, he came out with a newspaper last time, right?
Yeah.
Read it on the way to the cage.
Then he got choked.
All the new current stories.
And then he got choked by Barao, I think.
He got lit up on the feet. But in general, his boxing can stand par with pretty much most all the other fighters in the division.
All right. Reza Madadi making his UFC debut. We got another Iranian into UFC. That's right, folks. We're taking over. You, Darvish, Reza Madadi, we're taking over sports. Adding to Amir Sadala and Kamal Shalarus, who Stefan knows is world class.
World class.
World class.
You have great wrestling, but my wrestling is world class.
Yup. And so Reza Madadi, I think I've seen him fight once. He fought, I think, Rich Clemente, and he was gifted a decision. Madadi was. I'm not going to lie. He was gifted a decision because the fight was in Sweden. Hey, if you want to win, you got to pay the judges. What are you going to do?
But yeah, I agree. Overall, it looks like it'll be a really good card. The thing about the free cards is you tend to get a lot of the lower guys, and the lower guys tend to fight more balls out, you know? A lot of them, the reason they're not top guys is because they're generally lacking something, which is traditionally wrestling and grappling, it seems like. So you get guys who just defense have a bit more general. Sloppy barn burners, but in terms of just action, the fights are good. So I think it'll probably end up being a really entertaining card. You might not know the guys, but they'll probably swing for it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I just wish it wasn't on Fuel TV.
Yeah, the only problem is the channel that's on now.
I need Comcast to get their shit together. That really needs to happen.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there should be other ways to watch it. If you don't have Fuel TV, if your cable provider doesn't provide it, you know, I think it'd be on UFC.com or something, but I don't think they are.
If they charge, so, we'd do it. If they charge like $15, whatever, something like that, we'd throw in. Why not?
Yeah, if you get to watch all of it. But yeah, it's weird because this is usually an issue that the UFC has actually been really good about, is being able to have their content be on many different platforms, so you can kind of, you know, ingest it any way you want. But that's mostly for the paid content. That's where you have all the different options. You can go in UFC and buy it there, or buy it on Xbox now. But it seems like the free stuff, especially on Fuel, because I mean, we talk about it a lot because we don't have it, but there doesn't seem to be an easy solution for how we can get that content. So, I mean,
it's pretty much Dana White tells you, go knock on the door of your local cable provider and demand it. That's not going to happen.
It worked. That's how they got Versus back on DirecTV, because Versus wasn't on DirecTV for the longest time. And then the UFC announced they were going there. And then it popped back up like 3 days before the first UFC on Versus card. I mean, it seemed like it was related to that. But I guess the contract with Comcast and Fox that owns Fuel TV isn't up for negotiation again until like mid-year. So
yeah, and I think at that point they probably will, you know, work something out, because I think it's dumb to have, for them to have so much content that's not available to such a large provider. I just think it's weird that, you know, Dana White's been so integrated with new technologies and being able to, you know, push his content in as many different assets so people can get it however, you know, however they can. It's just weird that they kind of dropped the ball on this, but I'm sure we'll have Fuel either on Comcast or they'll have, you know, some app you can get or something. I mean,
there's no Fuel TV card booked after this. I just want to throw that out there. There might be a reason for that. There's a lot more FX ones coming up.
They need to do something with that UFC app they created on Xbox. There's a lot of content I would feel like they would put there, just like free content stuff. They're streaming stuff off the site. And when I was looking at it last, it's still just gives you the option to buy UFC 144 in Japan and look at some fight bios or watch the countdown show to that. There's not really a lot else going on there. It seemed pretty exciting when they launched it, but it doesn't seem to be a high priority for them to keep any type of new or fresh content on it. So I don't know. I feel like they're missing another way to connect with the fans through it so far.
Yeah, no, I agree too. They should. It seems like they only care about on the app. You can always pay the stuff you have to pay for, that's available, but the extra free content that would just be kind of UFC's good graces to give to fans, like, oh, they might want to watch hype videos or countdown shows, and we could put that stuff on there just as easily. But I mean, I'm sure it takes some kind of financial, you know, getting the IT guys and, you know, having all this,
well, the network owns a share also, probably,
so yeah, them so to but it would be, I think it'd be a nice feature. I mean, I think they could make that app more promotable on the UFC dashboard, but like Stefan said, probably not a very high priority. They got a lot of their stuff on their plate they're probably worrying about.
I just want to be able to watch stuff that's already been on free TV, like on demand on the app.
Yeah.
Like old episode of Tough or Brazilian Tough. That would have been nice.
Yeah, that stuff you would think would be a good idea to have on that app. And I mean, I just don't think it's a high priority.
If it's free available somewhere else, you think they could have it free available there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can stream the episodes of Tough on the other websites, so you wish you could just do it through your TV.
Yeah. But whatever.
Yeah.
I would think it'd be smart if they had like a Netflix kind of deal. You could pay like $5 and UFC's whole library is open to you to watch all the old fights or whatever, and old, you know, Ultimate Fighters and stuff. But, you know, we'll see what they do with their content. That's really up to them. And I don't think it's a very high priority. You know, I'm sure if a lot of people did clamor to get more stuff on the UFC app, there might be some push to that, but
yeah, if people complain. That's how you get stuff done, man. What is it? The greasy? Was it the noisy? The squeaky wheel gets the oil, or whatever, shit like that.
Yeah.
People have to bitch.
Yeah, and I mean, Dana's pretty good about that stuff. I mean, he's easily the most like accessible CEO of a sporting franchise than anyone else. You know, he seems very, you know, it seems like he's on Twitter a lot religiously, and he actually responds to people himself, and you know, he's looking to fix problems all the time. So that's cool.
Yep. So yeah. Oh, let's throw this out there. We had some returns last night of legendary MMA fighters.
Oh, it's true. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of fights on last night that we all haven't been able to see, like ONE FC, and then was this one Amazon? Was it Amazon Fight Club
or something?
Amazon Fighting Championship, and then there was the other one too, Resurrection Fighting. There was a lot of small cards that had a lot of, you know, old veterans on them.
They gotta get Gilbert Ivel into the UFC at 205. If he wins one more at 205, they should bring him in because he looks like a monster that weight class.
Yeah, he looked good. Well, Bobby's referring. He was headlining. Was that one Resurrection Fighting Championships? I think it was Resurrection.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, he fought Houston Alexander, who probably most famous for beating Jardine and then having a really bad fight with Kimbo.
Yep.
He's been in the regional circuits for a while, and I guess this is Gilbert. Is this his first fight out of the UFC since he's been released?
He knocked somebody else out at 205 also.
Oh, 205. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's moved on to 205. And he looked good. He knocked him out, too, with his hands. Not a lot of kicks and knees from Gilbert now that he's older, but his hands look like they got better, so that's good.
They may as well bring him in because, you know, light heavyweight has always been kind of the marquee division of the sport, but it seems to be becoming very, very shallow lately, or at least they're just – isn't new blood in it. Now, Gilbert is not new blood by any means. He's a long veteran of the sport, but you could use more bodies at that weight class.
I think you got two problems. You got the fact that Jones is murking everybody, making it look bad, and then all those guys are just getting old, and they're not getting replaced with younger talent.
Yeah.
All you got is Jones, Phil Davis, and Gustafson. Well, Bader's kind of gotten his shit together, too. Yeah. But he's got to impress me a little bit more.
Yeah, the new generation of light heavyweight hasn't really developed yet. There's only a few key prospects, and then no one else really stands out. So, you know, maybe having older veterans stay in and get second chances at light heavyweight like Gilbert. I mean, does Gilbert really deserve to be in the UFC? Like, maybe at the very lowest echelon. Like, he just beat Houston Alexander, and we're already saying, like, oh, we should have him in the UFC.
But is he exciting? Cyril Diabate if he wins.
Yeah, but is he exciting? Yeah, and does that division need people to fight other people to be relevant? Yeah, it does. So, and there's enough like deep bodies of the world that he could fight to make interesting fights, and those make for good free TV fights, I think.
Yep, I agree. I like Gilbert a lot, though. I know you didn't like him.
I mean, yeah, I was dogging the guy, but I love him. I think he's awesome, punching referees and whatever, dude. Do what you got to do, Gilbert. He's his own man.
Gilbert has been DQ'd like 3 times, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, at least. I can think of 2 off the top of my head, so I'm sure at least a couple other ones. He doesn't like rules, man. He likes free-form combat. He wants to be able to punch and kick whoever, whenever.
Before we go, I remember we talked about how Barnett and Cormier is going to happen May 19th, and that Gilbert Melendez is going to defend his belt on that card. Has anybody heard anything as to who he's fighting? That's in 6 weeks.
Probably either, like we said before, it's either Pat Healy or Mr. Outside Hire. But
so Pat Healy.
Yeah, since we've heard nothing about Mr. Outside Hire, it's got to be inside.
All right. I was just curious. There's no news in MMA. You think that would get out?
It's weird they haven't announced it yet, but yeah.
There's literally nothing going on, though.
I thought we'd know by now, too, but I'm sure the fighters probably know who's fighting. If Pat Healy's fighting, they probably told him, like, oh, he'll probably fight, get ready, you know. But they haven't made anything official yet, so it is kind of weird.
Yeah. All right, folks. We made it. All the way through this UFC stretch with no UFC cards and no one else really making an effort to put on, like, a really good card. Like, Bellator didn't even, like, have any of their good champions fighting. Seemed kind of dumb, honestly. This seemed like a good opportunity to take advantage of the gap in UFC cards, but no,
They're one like of their good old-fashioned super fights.
You know,
yeah, we're gonna... those are actually coming up now that everything else is happening at the same time.
Exactly.
So it's going to be a whirlwind, you know. Well, that's just as good. I mean, it would have been nice to have more exciting stuff to talk about, but at least in the coming weeks, there's just going to be a shit ton of stuff, so that's good.
Next week's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure this UFC on this UFC Sweden card, which we've been talking about, isn't happening for 2 weeks. So, yeah. Pat on the back for us. So we're kind of early with this prediction stuff, I just realized.
We didn't predict, though. That's the thing. We just
That's true.
Broke down and talked about.
We're just going to talk about it some more next week.
Yeah,
God willing, something happens.
We'll do predictions on it or something.
Someone give Rampage some energy drink or something. We can talk about that. Go on a Rampage again.
And I'll share my feelings on season 2 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. When Lavender Gooms is back, he's going to bitch about the referees in the Syracuse-Ohio State game for a good 5 minutes.
Did March Madness have anything to do with this long break, not wanting to compete against that?
I don't think so, because there was going to be a card at the end of March, but they just didn't have a main event for it. Remember when they were going to have one in Toronto?
Yeah, they couldn't.
Or Montreal, something like that.
It's amazing that you bring in 2 new divisions and you still can't fill out a card.
I just think they booked all the title fights too far ahead. I think they were hoping Overeem and JDS would be able to go sooner than they are, but... All right.
Fair enough.
All right, folks. This was It's MMAzing Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week, April 8th. Have an It's MMAzing week. When you guys figure out what that means, you get back to us.
Why can't you just say have an MMAzing? Why did it have to be an It's MMAzing?
Because there's a guy who owns MMAzing.
It would have made more sense if you just said have an MMAzing.
There's a clothing brand called MMAzing. We've got to keep calling it It's MMAzing.
It's a key factor into our branding.
It really
branding.
Is. If not, people are going to order what's MMAzing. It's MMAzing.
The thing that we're discussing.
Exactly. All right, people. Thanks for listening.
Later. See you next week.